Hi, I'm Corinne, and welcome to Sex Life, the podcast that lets people tell their stories of sex, sex work, eroticism, and fetishes. This episode, I'm talking to Mike. Mike's a client of sex workers. So we talk about his experiences of being a client of sex workers, and we talk about fetishes, exploring fetishes, boundaries, media, terminology, and lots of things around experiencing sex work. This was recorded. This is going to be one of those recordings that has poor sound quality. Apologies. It was recorded in a bar with a dodgy microphone and with Christmas carols playing in the background. So bear with it. It's really quite interesting, and I hope you enjoy. Welcome, Mike. It's great to talk to you.
Always a pleasure.
Could you introduce yourself?
Okay. Well, obviously, my name's Mike. Obviously, I'm a guy. Late 30s, Australian national, tertiary educated professional. Yeah. That's the basics.
You sound like the kind of guy, if I bumped into you at the supermarket, you'd just look like any other guy there.
I'd like to think I'm slightly more memorable than that, but basically.
True. You're just a normal, everyday guy. And we're talking to you today because you're a client of sex workers.
Yes, and have been semi-regularly for about 5 or 6 years, and intermittently for another couple of years before that.
Okay, so you're quite au fait with the inner workings of the sex work world.
Yep.
Fantastic. How did you get started?
I'm just trying to remember now. I actually honestly think I was just curious one night, so I went to a brothel up in Brisbane. I was single at the time. I was basically horny, to put it bluntly, and just figured I'd go along and have a look, and saw one of the ladies there, and had a reasonably good experience, and every now and then went back.
Always back to the same brothel?
Went there a few times, and then found another one which was a bit more convenient to where I was living at the time, and was semi-regularly there, and occasionally went to there was half a dozen through Brisbane, so in a suburb, so occasionally went to one of the others depending on where I was at the time or where I was living at the time. And
sure.
And then gradually, as I went down, started seeing ladies privately.
How is the difference between seeing brothel workers and seeing private workers?
From my experience, and this doesn't necessarily hold true for everyone.
Yeah, actually, I'll put a big disclaimer on this. This is just our individual stories, and it's just our words, and it doesn't hold true for a very wide and diverse industry.
From my experience, the brothel experience is a bit more regimented.
Sure.
In the way it's done. The ladies tend to have a more set service, whether that's dictated by the policies of the establishment or by what everyone else is doing. So, you go in, you start your time, you get to the end of it, you hear the buzzer go off, letting you know you've got 5 minutes left. And I found after a while that didn't particularly suit me. I started looking at a few ads and decided I had a few fantasies I wanted to live out, and saw a lady privately, and just decided I like the, in some ways, more relaxed, less, more free-flowing atmosphere a bit better, and went from there.
Interesting. Thank you. So you said there you were exploring some fantasies a little bit. Is that something that you found seeing sex workers has helped you with?
Definitely. It's if you're up front with the lady or the person,
yep,
depending on your orientation and your preferences, it can be a lot easier to discuss things. You don't have to worry about freaking someone out and throwing them off in a relationship. It's a safe, easy environment. Generally, if you present something politely and discuss it openly, the worst you'll have is, sorry, that's not something I offer.
Yeah, right.
You're not going to have someone go, you freak, slap you and run you out or lock you out of the house.
Yep, get that, I get that. So it's kind of like you're speaking to a professional who's seen it all before and knows what they're doing. Can help you walk through your first time with, you know, exploring those experiences.
Very definitely. And they can suggest, they'll often have had exposure to those fantasies or acts or situations,
yeah,
in their own past experiences, and can know enough to guide you to help you enjoy it rather than two people fumbling around and having a bad experience and never trying it again.
Interesting. So they could probably even suggest different ways or things that you haven't quite thought of, or...
Yeah. It might be those. If you're really caught up into it, you just... Someone suggests, ooh, why don't we try this?
Yeah.
Also, you'd enjoy that. Maybe...
Maybe you might like this as well.
Maybe you might like this as well.
Yeah.
That's... I don't think that's really going to work, but maybe if you tried it this way.
Yeah, right. Yep.
And it's... There's a few things I've tried that I've gone, yeah, okay, not really my thing.
Yep.
And there's a few things I've gone, bloody hell, that was fun, let's do it again.
And were you surprised by things that you didn't expect that were really good?
Quite a few times. But it's just sort of opened my mind up to a recent point where there's a few hard limits I have. But outside of those two or three very specific things, I'd at least be willing to talk about most things now.
Yeah, right. So you feel like you're more open-minded now?
Yeah, it's just the exposure. It's the realisation that these things aren't weird. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not odd. It's what people like, what people enjoy. If it's done safely between consenting adults, why not enjoy it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. Do you want to talk about review websites a little bit? I don't even know if you do punters or...
I used to be semi-active on one particular review site called Punters Planet. When I first started seeing private ladies, I just basically started Googling and found it.
Yep.
And in the early days, at least, it was a good resource. It gave me a bit of information about a few people I wanted to see, and there was some advertising on there. And
yeah.
There's a few helpful tips and bits of advice I found.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I think, particularly over the last 2 years or so, few too many idiots are involved in it now.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion of it. Other people might disagree, but just from parts of what I've seen in the vibe, I just don't like it anymore, and I tend to avoid it in general these days.
Do you feel like the internet sort of gives people a feeling that they can take away their filter and just, you know, they have a level of anonymity that they can hide behind, so they can say whatever is really in their head without putting a politeness filter on it?
Definitely. the almighty keyboard warrior.
Yes. Yeah.
Who would never say it in person, but would quite happily type it out there for everyone else to see. And
yeah.
The other side, it is, I think sometimes it allows too much information.
Yes.
To go backwards and forwards too easily, which I think can be an issue in some cases.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of feel like it gives a bad impression on sex work clients a little bit as well sometimes. Because it only takes one...
It goes in both directions.
Oh, there's some fantastic resources on there, and don't get me wrong, I think it's really useful,
but it only takes one person to be a dickhead to tarnish the whole thing.
Well, it's the same as walking through a shopping centre. You'll pass 1,000 people walking through the shopping centre, but the only one you'll remember is the one idiot who didn't get out of your way.
That is a perfect analogy. That is so good. Thank you. So, how do you go about finding your sex workers of choice nowadays? Do you have regulars that you just see now?
There's one lady I've been seeing regularly. It's not like I see a religiously once a month, but she's the one lady I go back to again and again. Our best guess, we were actually talking about the other day, is we've known each other for about 4.5 years.
So that's longer than a lot of relationships, normal, vanilla, straight, real life relationships last for.
Well, I reckon most, 40% of marriages end within the first 2 years. So. And what's actually come with that is we both know each other well. We know each other's likes and dislikes, and we've got a great level of trust has developed between us.
Yeah.
So we can suggest things we'd like to try to each other and be even more comfortable than we would be otherwise, and away we go.
So it is a type of relationship, isn't it? You have a connection and you know each other really well.
Within very defined boundaries.
Yes.
And probably the biggest difference is that those boundaries are defined up front, very clearly, which in a civilian relationship, for want of a better term, they often won't be.
No.
And as long as people respect those boundaries, it can work very well over a very long period.
Yeah, right.
Outside of that one particular lady, these days I actually attend either, there's a advertising website called Scarlet Blue.
Yep.
Or Twitter.
Right.
Those are probably the two main places.
And do you feel like on Twitter you can get to know someone a little bit before you even make contact with them?
In some cases, yes.
Yeah.
Some ladies purely use it as very pure advertising function, which is great. It's a good way to get instantaneous information out there. Hey, I'm available this evening from 6 o'clock onwards.
Yeah.
Great, it's the fastest way to get that out there. For some people that'll work.
Yeah.
Others use their postings and you get to see a bit about them, get a feel for the person. And I'm more attracted to the interaction than to a physical type.
Right.
So that gives me a better feel in a lot of cases for what the interaction would be like than just looking at an advertising site or something else. So that's works well.
Yeah.
And the other side of it is probably the closest I come to having a real fetish is threesomes.
Yep.
So the regular lady I see, and I tend to pick out some of the ladies we like on Twitter and then arrange to see them. And she's the one I tend to do threesomes with, so.
Yeah, right.
We tend to watch who each other flirt with on Twitter and then go from there. And I'm going to tell this podcast on, she's going to listen to that and burst out laughing.
Hi, if you're listening. I'm going to give you giggles now. Edit this bit out.
Leave it here.
I kind of feel like I might want to talk about, because you just said you don't have a type, and like everyone thinks that escorts are all, you know, young, blonde, pneumatic.
Some are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Some are, and some are brilliant, and that's their niche. But, you know, if it's, there are a billion types, like there is no one escort type. Or a sex worker type.
No, it's... about the only common factor, I think, is it takes a particular resilience of personality.
Yeah, you have to
be able to do it on a long-term basis.
Yeah.
But other than that, let's see, the last ladies I've seen, let's see, we had a 6-foot-tall lady who currently has pink hair, before that was blonde, before that was a redhead, and before that was a brunette, in the last 4 months. A voluptuous 5'2" blonde with curly hair from England.
Yep.
A 5'10" brunette, quite an athletic figure. Probably about a 5'9" to 5'10" curvy redhead. They're prototypical pneumatic blonde.
And I don't want to make it seem like I'm having a go at pneumatic blonde women, because my God, you're gorgeous. Yeah.
It is a stereotype for
the media.
This style of sex work.
Yeah.
Strippers, porn stars.
Yeah.
And it's one that's been perpetuated mainly by the media.
Yeah.
Not the sex work media, but by mainstream media, and they sort of push it onto everyone else.
Mm.
And a very petite 5'2" brunette was the other lady I've seen. So that's a pretty decent cross section of physical types.
I think the only common denominator by type is that they're all women.
And intelligent.
Yeah, wow.
The one thing, if I can't hold a conversation with someone, I don't particularly want to interact with them on an intimate basis.
Right.
As I said, it's the interaction that I like.
Yeah, so it's for you, the booking is not just sex, it's not just things in orifices. It's a connection and an emotion, and it's intimacy, it sounds like.
Yeah. It's physical interaction, intellectual interaction.
Mm.
There is some sort of emotional element to it.
Mm.
If you don't have all of those, for me, it's not worth spending the time on.
Yeah.
Again, there's this kind of, some people purely want to go and they want to have a physical release.
Yeah.
Indulge themselves sensually for an hour or two or whatever and walk away from it.
But, yeah.
And every now and then, I'll do that.
Oh, look, who hasn't wanted to just go home and have a quick wank, and it's like the equivalent of that, you know, purely physical.
Yeah, I had a bit of a bad high stress period earlier in the year, and I got to the end of it and said, screw this, I just needed 3 or 4 hours of absolute and utter debauchery.
Mm-hmm.
And arranged a couple of ladies to see where I knew that was what I was going to have. Quite enjoyed it and felt a hell of a lot better afterwards.
That's interesting. How long afterwards does that good feeling last for? Is it like minutes or hours?
Sometimes days.
Yeah, right.
It's enough. It might not just necessarily be the pure afterglow from that. It's the fact that it reduces your stress levels, it puts you in a better mood.
Yeah.
I've gone out and had fun on a Friday night and then gone back to work on a Monday, and the guys have said, what the hell have you been up to? You actually look like you're in a good mood for a change. And that was, 3 days later?
Yeah, right.
So it's...
yeah, spring in your step.
Pretty much.
It's,
you do something to really relax yourself and have fun, it's gonna last for a while. It's no different from going on a holiday or having a good night out or anything else.
Yep.
You can go and have a good night out with friends, and you'll still be sitting 2 days later going, that was a damn good night, I'm still in a good mood.
Yeah.
This is no different. This is a slightly different type of interaction.
Yes. Yeah. And because I think you're hitting different elements in your brain, like, the emotional interaction and the intellectual interaction as well as the physical, I think that would probably add to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's definitely, and it's it is completely different to what you'd be doing normally day to day, so it stands out. It is the sort of thing they remember. I'm trying to think of the right way to put it, but it is a step outside the normal, so.
Yeah. Do you ever think like you've overstepped boundaries or you've gone somewhere you're not comfortable with?
A couple of times. Mainly earlier on, it was when we just hadn't had enough of a conversation to define exactly what the boundaries were.
Right.
And we both had a perception of, slightly different perception of where the line was being drawn.
Yep.
It came up, we stopped, discussed it. Well, fair enough, that's where it is.
Yeah.
Keep going. There's a couple of things I've tried different times that I've gone, yeah, that's fair enough, it just wasn't for me. I don't particularly see the attraction in it.
Yeah.
But I can still say, yeah, I've tried it, I've given it a fair go.
Yeah, yeah. Because if you never try, you never really know. It'll always be niggling in your head.
Yeah. There's a couple of ladies I've seen over the years where I haven't, it hasn't been a bad experience, but it hasn't ticked enough of the boxes for me to go out of my way to go back again.
Yeah.
I've been relatively lucky. I've never had a really bad experience. I've had a couple of sort of a bit, yeah, okay, but fair enough.
Yeah.
But even that, yeah, it's par for the course in some ways.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is a reason it's called punting.
Do you object to being called a punter?
If it's used in a derogatory fashion, I find it a little bit annoying.
Yeah, right.
But in some ways, it's also just an accepted semi-discreet terminology.
What about a John? I mean, that's a bit of an American thing more than an Australian thing.
Well, Americans are simply called hobbyists.
Yeah, there's hobbyists as well. Yeah. It's more, John is, seems to me to be more a derogatory term and often used by law enforcement.
Yeah. Anything used in a derogatory fashion is annoying.
Yeah.
If it's not used in a derogatory fashion, it doesn't particularly bother me one way or another.
Sure. Yeah.
What actually bothers me more than anything else is the terminology used for the sex workers rather than the clients.
Yeah, right.
Because at the end of the day, they're more stigmatised than we are.
Really? Because I kind of feel like you guys are hidden away and, you know, talked about in whispers and giggles a little bit.
But we're also not demonised by the media.
True.
And by general society.
True.
There is a bit of an acceptance, oh yeah, he's a guy, yeah, he's got needs, he's going to find a way to fulfil them.
There's a little bit of, you
there
know,
is some of it where it's, there is the, he's too ugly or too weird or too something to get laid any other way, but anyone so stupid as to have that preconception basically doesn't deserve to be urinated if they were on fire. Unless you drank a pint of gasoline first.
Geez, that'll clean you out. So oftentimes clients are thought of as being a little bit helpless and they're being taken for a ride or taken advantage of or, you know, yeah, they're being, they're gullible in a little ways. Is that, do you think that applies?
There are some cases when it would.
Yeah.
And I think it's mainly going to occur in clients who neglect where the boundaries are.
Right.
Who are going to start to become smitten.
Yes.
For want of a better term.
Who can't switch off at the end of the
Who forget that it is a professional interaction.
Yeah.
And most ladies aren't going to take advantage of that. There's going to be some out there who will.
Yeah.
There's going to be some lawyers will take advantage. It's not something that's restricted to that industry.
No.
I've got a friend, a lady friend, who had to get a car fixed recently, who basically got taken advantage of by mechanics. So it happens.
Yes. Yes.
It's in any industry.
Yeah.
But in terms of this one, I think it's the main time it's going to happen is when people forget that it's a professional relationship and they forget the boundaries that have been set.
Yeah, right.
I suppose the magic question is, it is a professional reaction. If you walk out at the end of it regretting that you've just spent X number of dollars,
yep,
there's something wrong and you've got to have a look at what you're doing.
Yeah.
Whether it just be this particular time or in general.
Yeah.
If you walk out at the end and think, damn, that was fun, that's not a problem.
Yeah, right.
I suppose my parents found out I was seeing ladies professionally a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Because my mother had the same model mobile phone I did and managed to pick mine up and saw some text messages. And she's mid to late, mid-60s now.
Yeah.
And it's rather old-fashioned interviews in some ways.
Yeah.
Basically track the shits.
Right.
I was visiting with them from interstate at the time and it was a rather fun few days.
Yep.
And before I left to go back home, Dad and I were sitting having a scotch one evening and he basically said, okay, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. Number one, can you afford it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I don't spend more than I have. Number two, do you enjoy it? Yeah. I do. That's why I do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you treat the ladies, do you like them? Do you treat them with respect? Yeah. Then go for it. I've got to side with your mother in public, but I don't give a shit one way or the other. And to me, those are the basic questions. If you can't say yes to all of those questions,
three really
good. Gotta have a serious think about what you're doing.
Yeah.
But the flip side is the same three questions hold true for just about any interaction you're going to have.
Yeah.
And just about anything you're going to do and spend money on. You might tweak them slightly based on the situation, but you've got to ask those same things about everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So three good life lessons in that. Thank you, Mike's dad.
he definitely has his moments.
That'll probably do us, I think. Is there anything else you want to touch on?
I do have one little hobby horse.
Yeah, go for it.
One of the things I really hate about a lot of sex industry and other things is when language is used incorrectly and used in an exclusionary manner.
Great.
And people talk about fetishes, knock down on them, and so on. I've got some friends who are in a dominant submissive relationship.
Sure.
And he actually lost his job.
Right.
Because of it a while back. Because people look down on it, and just because of the term, part of it is just because of the terminologies and the ways it's perceived.
Yeah.
If you get down to the basic meanings of the term, and I'm pretty sure this is the actual way the terms are defined in psychological journals, or it's very similar to it.
Yes.
A fetish is anything that's intrinsically necessary for a person to reach full arousal.
Right.
And a fetish can be anything from the partner having red hair.
Yep.
Through big breasts, through to being coated in jello and spanked with a leather spoon.
Yep.
To being tied up, to anything and everything in between.
Yep.
And even though, say, liking redheads or liking busty women, technically they're fetishes, they aren't perceived that way.
Yeah.
And because of the other ones, because there's stigma around them, they tend to get shunted off under the rug and pushed aside and stigmatized against.
Yep.
And the other term that goes with it then is kinky.
Right.
And technically, kinky is something that's, it is anything that's sexually out of the ordinary for the person involved.
Yeah.
Or people involved. For my friends who are in a BDSM relationship, for them, kinky is having what most people would then call vanilla sex.
Yeah, right.
Normal, missionary.
Yes.
Traditional sex. For them, that's kinky. That's not their normal.
Yeah. Yep.
For someone else, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
But that's all it is. All it is something that's out of the ordinary. And again, people stigmatise against it. They automatically link kinky with BDSM, bondage, so many of the things along those lines.
Yeah.
When that's nothing to do with it.
No.
For some people, kinky is actually having oral performed on them.
Yes.
Because it's not part of their regular sexual experience.
Yeah.
That's, and it's one of those things that's a little bit of a hobby horse of mine, is the way language is used to compartmentalise and exclude people and things.
Yeah.
If we start to use language more correctly, I think it can actually start to break down the stigma and around so many of these things.
That's an excellent point. Thank you. Yeah. No, I like that a lot. I really do. I often get asked as a sex worker, what's the weirdest thing you've ever done? And I'm, well, weird is it's really dependent on what your definition of weird is. Like, my definition of weird, I think it's weird to just be straight-laced and vanilla and, you know, be not exploring things, but your idea of weird might be my idea of normal. Yeah.
It's just so subjective.
Mm.
The only things that should be taboo are those that don't involve informed consent.
Yes.
And the corollary of that is minors who can't give informed consent.
Yep.
Anyone who crosses that line basically needs to be fed through a meat grinder. And the spin-off of that is the infliction of pain or damage that again doesn't involve informed consent.
Yeah.
Some people enjoy pain as a sensation as part of their play.
Exactly. Right. It trips off endorphins in the brain. It feels fantastic.
But it should be done in a consensual manner. So the big thing, the only hard taboo should always be consent.
Yes. It's the only thing that's not negotiable.
Other than that, find someone who likes the same things you do or has complementary likes, bloody go for it.
Because we can guarantee, no matter what you like, there is someone else out there who likes it.
If you
want
to be painted in purple with yellow polka dots, dressed in rubber, hung upside down, and be filleted by a chicken, someone out there will probably find it that agreeable and agree to help you do it.
The chicken may not.
Or maybe someone in a chicken suit there.
I like that.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
If everyone's going to have fun, the world would be a better place if all people were just open about what the hell they enjoy and were able to enjoy it more.
Yes, and not worry about what other people are thinking of what they enjoy.
Yeah, it's so many people never get the chance to work out what they actually like, because they're afraid of the way it'll be perceived. But I mentioned it earlier.
Mm.
Someone might be curious about being tied up or tying someone else up or being spanked or being urinated on, but they're afraid to even broach the subject because of the way society in general perceives it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the great things about sex workers, is that suddenly they have a safe, consenting, open-minded avenue to explore these things.
Yeah.
And that probably wouldn't be there in any other way. So it's, I think it's a very necessary thing.
That's an excellent point. I really like that. Thank you for bringing it up. I think we'll probably leave it there.
No worries.
Well, that was my chat with Mike. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did enjoy listening and talking to Mike. And big thank you to Mike for coming on. It's not always easy for clients of sex workers to speak freely. So I hope you like it. As always, I'd love ratings or reviews on iTunes. But more importantly, I'd love ideas for episodes and ideas of people who you think would be interesting to talk to. The website, sexlifepodcast.com, has a contact form. It also has email and Twitter details, has show notes and places for you to leave comments. So best way to find me is sexlifepodcast.com. See you next time.